Hello and welcome to The Learning College, put on by Vanguard Audiobooks. Today we're going to delve further into Merchants of Sin by Benjamin Garland. You can find that at merchants-of-sin.com. This book was published in 2017. It covers some of the same ground as the E. Michael Jones audiobooks we've done. Also, Kevin MacDonald's Culture of Critique and John Murray Cudahy's The Ordeal of Civility. Related books, and all of them discuss some of the Jews behind the pornography and the various media forms through which they promote pornography, and the academic intellectualizing, the pseudo-social science that backs up their view that the way for Jews to win the battle with the larger intelligent white race is to unstring it morally by promoting perverse sex. And this all goes back to Freud and then follows through to Magnus Hirschfeld in Germany and then on to the Frankfurt School in the America, formed by Jews at Columbia who'd been kicked out of Germany. And we heard a lot last chapter about Magnus Hirschfeld and the New Left and such. In this chapter, today, in this session, we're going to do part six on Wilhelm Reich, who's one of the main theorists of all this. And again, the same pattern, like German Jew that comes to America. So we're going to do page 80 up through page 100, part 6, Merchants of Sin, part 6, Wilhelm Reich and the Sexual Revolution. You can find this and everything we record at vnnforum.com and later permanently archived at alexlinder.com. So part 6, Wilhelm Reich and the Sexual Revolution. Begins with an epigraph. Reich antedated the attempt of the Frankfurt School to amalgamate sociology, Marx, and psychology, Freud. And that epigraph is from John Murray Cudahy, who I just mentioned. So, again, Reich came before the attempt of the Frankfurt School, 30s, 40s, 50s, to amalgamate sociology, to combine Marx and Freud. Reich came before that. Wilhelm Reich was born in 1897 to wealthy Jewish parents in the Eastern European province of Galicia. Again, that's a code for nasty, shtetl-type Jews, the lowest, nastiest form of Jews. So he's born about 10 years after Hitler, or 9 years, in Galicia, where he would spend much of his child and teenage years. His, quote, conscious sexuality was awakened, he would later write, at the age of 4 through, quote, contact with the maids. He eavesdropped on one of them having sex when he was 4.5 years old and reportedly felt, quote, erotic sensations of enormous intensity. Shortly after that, he fondled the family nurse in a bed and she let him climb upon and attempt to have sex with her. He first had actual intercourse with one of the cooks at age 11.5 and claimed he had sex with servants from then on almost every day for years. When he was 10, his mother began cheating on his father with his tutor. Reich admitted he got, quote, erotic feelings watching this through the bedroom door and even fantasized about joining in. Quote, once I even considered breaking in on them and demanding that she have intercourse with me, too. Shame. Threatening that otherwise I would tell father. And all this is footnoted, if you want to get the book. And there's a big picture of Wilhelm Reich, kind of crazy hair, sort of a square-faced Jew. Not particularly Jewish-looking, I wouldn't say. Not compared to most of the others we discussed in the earlier sessions. More just Middle European, Germanic-type look to him. When his father began to suspect his mother's cheating, he forced Reich to tell him what was happening. His frightened mother then tried to kill herself, only to be saved by Reich's father, who then beat her, quote, mercilessly, almost daily for the following year, until she finally managed to succeed with suicide on the third try when Reich was 13. Reich's role in his mother's death haunted him for the rest of his life. 4 years later, when Reich was 17, his father was dead of pneumonia, possibly self-inflicted, or at least Reich thought so. All of the above comes from Reich's highly disturbing autobiography, passion of youth. Here is a small sample of the innumerable other perversions found in the book. Colon block quotes. Since I always bathed with mother, sexual feelings regularly stirred within me, and I often attempted to undress mother with my eyes. Twice I masturbated while consciously fantasizing about my mother. And again, one of our farmhands had a son approximately 20 years old. He would lie in front of the house, playing with his genitals. I enjoyed watching him play with himself, and through this experienced highly pleasurable sensations. And again, the sight of urinating stallions, cows, dogs, etc. produced pronounced sexual sensations in me. And finally, one day I grew so excited looking at the animals that I took a whip with a smooth grip, turned it around, and thrust the handle into the vagina of a mare. The animal was surprised at first, but then seemed to enjoy it. She spread her legs wide and began to urinate while I had an orgasm. Wilhelm Reich, folks. In 1919, after serving in World War I, Reich moved to Vienna, where he met with Sigmund Freud and became the youngest official member of the Viennese Psychoanalytic Society by 20 years. 1919. He began seeing patients and treating them to psychoanalysis, which generally just consists of first diagnosing the patient as neurotic, then discovering they have a repressed sexual, quote, fixation on someone in their immediate family. Freud believed, or at least taught, that everyone is sexual from birth and goes through psychosexual stages in which their sexual drive, or libido, is centered around a specific part of their body. First is the oral stage, second is the anal stage, and so on, with the final stage being genital. Anal, oral, and genital, all in quotes. Getting hung up on any of these stages causes mental disorders later in life, such as, quote, anal personalities, unquote, according to Freud. Since the final and ideal stage is genital, Reich's theory was that genital satisfaction is the key to mental health. And on page 83, there's a giant passion of youth, graphic of the cover of his book, Passion of Youth, Wilhelm Reich, an autobiography, 1897 to 1922. Pictures show some youth, some young kids in Europe lying on some grass. I've never seen that book personally, but it's filled with the stuff like what we quoted. He became obsessed with this idea and began prescribing for patients to have affairs, sleep with prostitutes, and began teaching even elderly patients how to masturbate, with detailed advice on how to have strong orgasms, quote, total orgasm. Reich said that genital stagnation, direct quote, could result in, quote, heart ailments, excessive perspiration, hot flashes and chills, trembling, dizziness, diarrhea, and occasionally increased salivation. All that caused by genital stagnation. It's probably safe to say that this was just a projection of Reich's own peculiarly perverted nature. He once told a colleague that he felt ill and saw, quote, black before his eyes, after going just 2 days without orgasm, from which he got immediate relief upon release. This obsession with orgasms made Freud and the other psychoanalysts increasingly uncomfortable. He broke with them around the time of the publication of his book, The Function of the Orgasm, in 1927. So this is old world German-Jewish stuff. He had recently discovered Marx, and now, fusing Marx's theories with Freud's, was seeking to apply the lessons of psychoanalysis to society at large, rather than just to individual patients, free the masses from sexual repression, and pave the way toward a peaceful communist utopia. So Jews are promoting all these bogus universalisms of universal psychological tics, universal economic stage development, Marx's pseudoscience, and Freud's unconscious, etc., what have you. He's combining these. So he's just another left-wing radical, but he's added sex and sex psychology from Freud to Marx and so-called economic iron laws of history. Now that he was alienated from Freud, he joined the Communist Party of Austria in 1928 and began helping them agitate for a civil war, which they hoped would precipitate a communist takeover. So again, when Hitler goes to Vienna, he's mildly pro-Jew. But after his experience in Vienna, dealing with people similar to Wilhelm Reich and noticing the extreme smuttiness of theatrical productions, he becomes intensely anti-Jew because he had to deal with people like this Wilhelm Reich. In 1929, he founded multiple sex clinics to continue his sex work using the motto, quote, free sexuality within an egalitarian society. So a Jew promoting free love, saying you'll cure your neuroses by having an affairs. In 1930, he left Vienna and moved to Berlin, where he again joined with the Communist Party, the largest in Europe. There he opened up the German Association for Proletarian Sexual Politics, or SexPol, Sex-Pol, and gained many followers. Reich was a very compelling and charismatic speaker. He could gather crowds of up to 20,000 to listen to him preach his radical SexPol doctrine, both those capitalized, sex hyphen Paul. These were very turbulent times in Germany. Economic depression had caused widespread unemployment, degeneracy was rampant, and the communist and the National Socialist were locked in a violent struggle for the heart and soul of the German people, with conflicts in the streets occurring almost daily. Remember, it was Red Berlin, and Hitler sent Goebbels there to turn it brown, i.e. Nazi. And then there's a big picture of Wiener Stadtbrau and a bunch of people in front of it, one on a bike, most of them wearing hats, as was the way back then. And Garland's caption reads, Reich, third from left, with, quote, fellow travelers, underneath banners reading, vote communist, and with the communists against the fascists. Antifa, right? In 1932, an article by Reich was published in the first issue of the Journal for the Institute for Social Research, the Jewish Frankfurt School. Reich's fusion of Marx and Freud set the tone for the Institute's later publications, many of which would end up being highly influential on the New Left and counterculture that drove the sexual revolution of America and the West during the 1960s and 70s. See Part 5, that's what we heard last session. So, Frankfurt School, and it begins in the 30s in Germany, and then it closes as Hitler comes to power and resets up in America and promotes the crank ideas that inform the New Left and drive it and really almost create it. The same year, he wrote and distributed a pamphlet titled The Sexual Struggle of Youth, in which he encouraged adolescent sexuality to, quote, counter the pamphlets distributed by the National Socialists who were promoting sexual morality. Activities such as this put Reich on the Nazis' radar as they came to power. On March 2, 1933, just 3 days after the Reichstag fire, which gave Hitler the excuse needed to crack down on communists, an article in the Nazi newspaper Fuchsische Beobachter, the People's Observer, attacked Reich in his pamphlet, prompting him to flee the country. So the Frankfurt Institute just opens, and Reich is writing a pamphlet promoting free love, and the Nazis go after him, and he decides he better get out quick, so he runs to Denmark. He went to Denmark and published one of his seminal works, The Mass Psychology of Fascism, later that year. In The Mass Psychology of Fascism, Reich recognized the traditional patriarchal family as a microcosm of the authoritarian state, and theorized that sexual suppression within this structure is the root of fascism. See, that's why Jews, everything you see on TV promotes easy sex. And here, this is what we're learning at the Learning College, is the root of that. The Jews believe that self-control, particularly or most of all in the sexual sphere, will lead to fascism or authoritarianism, whatever they want to call it. And that is bad for Jews. So they promote loose sex because they believe that's good for Jews. And they know that it's bad for whites. Again, I'll read that. In The Mass Psychology of Fascism, Reich recognized the traditional patriarchal family as a microcosm of the authoritarian state. Now, the Anglo-conservative Edmund Burke, Anglo-Irish conservative, would say the family is the little platoon of society, so that's more your traditional view. And the Nazis would be in favor of that traditional view, as would the church generally. And theorized that sexual suppression within this structure is the root of fascism, occurring first in the nuclear family, the authoritarian miniature state. See, that's the alternative view of the family held by the Jew leftist, or at least promoted by them to destroy non-Jewish families, is that each family is a miniature Reich, essentially is what they're saying, a miniature Third Reich. The authoritarian miniature state, direct quote. Sexual repression ensures, quote, later subordination to the general authoritarian system, he wrote. So this is why, and you see, now you know the Jews are the main advocates of feminism, the main promoters, the main rewriters of the law across the whole front, and immigration, across man-female relations, and it's all aimed at destroying the family and destroying the race that's competing with them, and this is their intellectual justification for it, or explanation of why they promote the policies they do based on their beliefs. And we'd have to say they are right. If they do promote loose sex, of course they'll put it as something good and it's going to have good results, but their actual intent is they know it will destroy the family to promote loose sex like that, and that's what they're after. They want to destroy the tight nuclear family and the state composed of those families and the natural hierarchy and natural order of things and natural separation of races. All that they try to destroy because it's good for Jews. But the sexual part of this is incredibly important to understand. It's almost the most basic thing in their idea of how to go about destroying a racial competitor, which is our Aryan race. And as it was in Germany in the 1930s and 1920s, so it is today in America in the 1910s or 2010s. In this view, it is an anti-fascist imperative to work towards destroying the traditional nuclear family at all costs. And he's quite right. It sounds like an exaggeration. No, that's exactly right. Destroy the traditional nuclear family at all costs. So originally, under solid white conservative normal society, traditional patriarchal, all these are more or less synonyms or aspects of the same thing. Sexual deviancy is frowned upon and criminalized. And there are sections in the code of each of these countries, Germany or the U.S., that outlaw the acts common to or even particular to the diseased homosexuals and their like. So the Jews work on overturning that, and then they go on to the charade of getting the homos normalized, married, and then they move on to the transgender. So there's always another step to normalize something previously unthinkable and criminally outlawed, because it all works to reduce the number of whites who are able to form or sustain healthy nuclear patriarchal families. You understand, this is the most important thing in this whole book right here, and in many of these books that we've done, this is the guts of it. And so you know, when you know what the Jew is promoting and you know why he's promoting it, then you will know how you have to act against it, both in your own personal life and in terms of the communal politics that you adopt, to create the society that is worth being a part of and that fits and sustains our kind and allows them truly to have the best chance to flourish. That's what all this is about, this book, the Learning College in general, and the white movement in general, white nationalism or alt-right or whatever you want to call it. That's what it's all about, Nazis in the old days. You know, understand this. This is the heart of it, and it goes all the way, truly, as the leftists, the personal is the political. They made the personal stuff political, where we might have allowed a sphere for privacy and dignity. But in this sense, it really does go all the way from the individual and his sexual choices to the health of the nation. And you understand your role in that and what you need to do to be a valuable man or a valuable woman, create a valuable family, and be part of a valuable nation. And I think you do understand that, thanks to great books like this and the other ones we've mentioned. And again, this is stuff, the whole reason the Learning College exists is this stuff. Now you can self-publish it and get it out there, but why isn't Garland's book being published by Simon & Schuster? Why does E. Michael Jones have to publish his own stuff? You know, why isn't this stuff mass available? Well, because it's telling you the truth, and the truth is bad for Jews. And only what's good for Jews gets published. But what's good for Jews absolutely is bad for you and your kind. Now, again, I'll read this. In this view, it is an anti-fascist imperative to work towards destroying the traditional nuclear family at all costs. I mean, what a sick worldview. They want to destroy the family. Well, they're trying to destroy a racial competitor. And what is a race? It's a bunch of clans of related people. And the clans are made up of families. Well, we destroy that. We go after the specific role of the father. We go after the role of the mother. We redefine everything. We say the family in itself isn't valuable. A nuclear family is a horror, a prison, a dungeon, a sick thing. All they have not only generally targeting the family, but specifically targeting each of the roles within it. So they have tailor-made poisons for every member of the white family and every organization, every organizational form, or every structure that whites have ever created. They find a way through their culture of critique we heard about last session to criticize it and break it down and come up with plausible reasons that what's a good thing is actually a good and helpful thing is actually a bad, confining, restraining thing. But when you understand who they are and what their agenda is, then you can predict what they're going to do. Right? In this view, it is an anti-fascist imperative to work towards destroying the traditional nuclear family at all costs, as well as any and all sexual restraints, even or especially in children. You know, that's what this is exactly, very, very well written sentence, and that means that's why they're let fags adopt kids. You know, in the last couple of months, we've seen photos of these transgender freaks dressed up as drag queens, reading books to little kids in these insipid, idiotic, white middle-class or upper-middle-class mothers bringing their blonde little kids to see these drag queen freaks reading tales to them, like this book that just came out about how Santa's husband, where Santa is a black guy married to a white. And they just smear everything related to white culture. They take it and dip it in shit, and this is why they truly should be hated, and they truly should be stamped off the face of the earth. They are a tribe, which is another way of saying a race, that is trying to wipe out our race, and it has direct effects and is a direct attack on you, the individual man or woman, and your family and your genetic line. And that's what the white movement is about, protecting you, destroying them, and creating conditions in which our kind can flourish. So this sex gunk is targeted not just at our college kids coming of sexual age and on the verge of reproducing when they're biologically best fit for it, but even as little kids, it's going after them. Marx had also called for the, quote, abolition of the family, unquote, in the Communist Manifesto. It's a very good thing to remember. And Reich took this declaration very seriously. Reich spoke of the family as a disease, familitis, The family has a disease, femalitis. Itis is a medical appendage meaning inflammation. With his perverted mind, Reich found sexual symbolism everywhere in his analysis of fascism. Freud's theory of the Oedipal complex posits that all children want to have sex with their parents, and Reich wholeheartedly believed this. Remember, he himself literally had an incestuous fixation with his own mother. And then there's a nearly full-page graphic on page 87 of The Mass Psychology of Fascism by Wilhelm Reich, M.D., translated by Theodore P. Wolfe, M.D., from the Orgon Institute Press. And the better lettered among you will notice the word Orgon and remember the Orgon box that will come later. I'm not sure if Garland mentions that or not, but something associated with Reich. Turning on to page 88, according to Reich, the suppression of the so-called mother fixation found its ultimate outlet in the state, exemplified in such things as Goebbels' Ten Commandments, where he wrote, quote, "The homeland is the mother of your life. Don't ever forget it." And that's a direct quote from Goebbels. Nationalist feeling, Reich wrote, is based on the unconscious, deeply anchored mother fixation. Race theory, he further claimed, for reasons which fail to even resemble coherency, comes from a, quote, "mortal terror of natural sexuality and its orgasm function." Direct quote. He even went so far as to claim that the swastika represents intertwined human bodies having sex. The more sexually unsatisfied an individual is, he argued, the more powerfully they are subconsciously drawn to the symbol, conveniently drawing a direct correlation between one's sexual repression and inadequacy and their level of dedication to Nazism. And then there's a picture of the Nazi flag with the caption, "Two intertwined bodies having sex." After effectively getting kicked out of Denmark and then Sweden by those governments refusing to extend his visas due to the blatantly subversive nature of his political and theoretical work, Reich settled in Norway in 1934. In 1936, he published The Sexual Revolution, which in part excoriated the Soviet Union for pulling back on the radical sexual policies they had implemented after the Bolshevik Revolution, and in part laid out Reich's own ideas for sexual and social reform. And remember, when Lenin took power, yeah, they had always been promoting easy divorce and free love. And they were so disastrous in the Soviet Union, they led to so much discord and STDs that they imperiled the revolution along with their kooky economics. So they were forced to go back to somewhat to traditional economics in 1921 and sometime around then also more traditional sexuality, simply in order to safeguard their revolution. But they would have their second attempt in America in the 1960s and forward. And of course, they were trying to do it in Germany, but Hitler took power in 1933. So they were kind of forestalled after the 10, 12, 15 years from the end of the World War, at which point the Jews started making little communist putches, trying to communize the whole of Germany as they had the Soviet Union right before then, but they were stopped. So they promoted decadence under Weimar, but they never had a complete whole revolution, thanks to the Nazis. So in 1936, he's kicked out of Denmark and Sweden, runs over to Norway, publishes The Sexual Revolution with his ideas, and criticizes the Soviet Union for backsliding on their initial sexual liberation. By this time, he had been officially kicked out of both the Communist Party and the International Psychoanalytic Association, and was under vicious assault by the Norwegian press and scientific community, who publicly denounced him as a quack, quote, quote, "destructive for the spirit and morals of society," and, quote, "the slimiest kind of pornographer." So they knew what was up in Norway. Reich complained of the, quote, "almost daily dispute in the newspapers as to whether I was a charlatan or a genius, a Jew, a psychopath, or a sexual monomaniac. They asked the police authorities to throw me out of the country, They tried to bring a charge against me concerning the seduction of minors because I had affirmed infantile masturbation. Reich's insistence on the ridiculous notion of child sexuality was as present as ever in the sexual revolution. Quote, "In principle," he wrote, "unless we are charlatans or cowards, we must affirm the sexuality of adolescents, help them whenever we can, and do everything to prepare the final liberation of adolescent sexuality. This is a gigantic and responsible task." Close quote. Children and adults should be naked in front of each other as much as possible, Reich argued. His reasoning was that, first, covering up makes the child develop, quote, guilt feelings, and second, nakedness being taboo leads to lascivious curiosity. Flip on to page 90 and we see a photo of Reich holding up something. Some kind of a bottle, maybe, or a device. Caption reads, "Reich was an actual real-life mad scientist." In regard to having children watch their parents having sex, Reich could find, quote, "no argument against it, except that it might disturb the adult's pleasure." It was around this time he came to believe that, quote, "sexual energy is an actual, tangible thing. The sex act builds up friction and the orgasm is a literal, quote, electrical discharge," he decided. He began rigging patients' nipples and genitalia with electrodes in an attempt to measure this alleged sexual energy. Patients were attached to the machine and then instructed to, quote, "masturbate, to suck each other's nipples, to scratch, kiss, tickle, pinch, and caress one another." He then, now this is how insane this kike is. He then threw, quote, "meat, potatoes, vegetables of all kinds, milk, and eggs into a pot, cooked them, then brought a sample to his microscope, and stared at it for 6 hours until he saw minuscule blue vesicles breaking away. Minuscule blue vesicles, in quotes. This, he hastily concluded, was the life force itself. Yes, Reich believed he had in fact discovered the origins of life in a bowl of soup. He named these blue phenomena, quote, bions, B-I-O-N-S, bions. Bions then evolved into SAPA bions, SAPA hyphen bions, S-A-P-A, capital S, capital A, capital P, capital A, hyphen bions, sand packet bions, as they allegedly came from heated sand. SAPA bions radiated energy, he believed. He named this energy orgone, O-R-G-O-N-E, after orgasm, since he believed it to be sexual in nature. He treated what he thought was a cancerous growth in his cheek with these so-called SAPA bions, and then became convinced he had found the cure for cancer once it cleared up. Concentrated orgone would be the, quote, "final solution to the cancer problem," he wrote. He then built a cage in his basement, filled it with these so-called SAPA bions, and then took to sitting in it naked for hours on end. Eventually, he began to see, quote, "fog-like formations and bluish dots of line and light and, quote, violet light phenomena emanating from the walls." I could see someone like Cernovich doing that myself, but who knows what curiosities the future holds. These are curiosities from, you know, 80 years ago. So then this bastard comes over here, kicked out of, you know, essentially Austria, Germany, Sweden, Denmark, and finally leaves Norway. Reich arrived in America in New York, which he saw as a multicultural paradise, in August of 1939. He soon landed a gig teaching at the New School for Social Research, which was then known as the University in Exile, as it was home to around 200 emigres who had fled or been expelled by the Nazis or other European nationalist regimes. By this time, Reich had all but abandoned his political work and was primarily focusing on his orgone energy delusion. "I have actually discovered life," he wrote grandiosely. "It's truly incredible. I, a mere non-entity, a non-academician, a sexual scoundrel in the bourgeois sense, have made the discovery of the century. He soon came to believe that this orgone energy was everywhere, observing it through one of his makeshift instruments in the sky, in the grass, in the pavement, in the bushes, and so on. He wrote, matter-of-factly, that we live, quote, in the bottom of an ocean of orgone energy. The air which we breathe is in reality orgone energy. He then designed another, quote, orgone accumulator, which he believed concentrated the already omnipresent orgone sexual energy 3 to 5 times. So he builds an accumulator that will condense it 3 to 5 times. From then on, he built or sold or rented out these boxes and directed patients to sit in them for varying periods of time to cure, quote, sexual repression and all manner of other ailments. And it shows kind of an attractive woman, the graphic below that, sitting in an orgon box, well, orgon energy accumulator. Women were modest and only weighed, they didn't weigh 100, and, you know, they weighed 130 pounds back then, not the 167 they would weigh decades later. But this guy is just insane, basically. Reich wrote fellow Jew emigre Albert Einstein about his perceived orgone discovery, hoping to win his support. Quote, there is some reason to believe that it might be of use in the fight against the fascist plague, read the letter. Einstein, a dedicated Freudian and anti-fascist, obliged Reich with the opportunity to meet with him at Princeton. After a 5-hour meeting, skeptical but intrigued at Reich's pitch, Einstein requested an orgon box to investigate for himself. What caught Einstein's attention was the fact that the air was 1 degree higher above and around the box, indicating some sort of energy emittance. Much to Reich's dismay, after a few days of experiments, Einstein was able to find a simple explanation for this phenomenon. He wrote Reich that he regarded the matter, quote, the matter as completely solved. Reich, being psychologically incapable of ever admitting he was wrong, dealt with this rejection by assuming that Einstein must be lying and that he had somehow got sucked into a communist conspiracy against Reich. So he's a typical Jew paranoid type. All attacks or disagreements with Reich were always blamed on communist conspiracy and or shortcomings of the opponent. Analysts who doubted his theories were sexually jealous of him and his, quote, orgiastic potency, unquote. Colleagues and students with anything less than blind obedience were suspected of being government or communist spies. When journalist Mildred E.D. Brady wrote an article attacking Reich and the cult of sex and anarchy he had birthed, Sex and Anarchy, Mildred E.D. Brady, Reich claimed that she must also be part of the communist conspiracy against him and that she actually just wanted to sleep with him, labeling her, quote, an intelligent but obviously sex-hungry woman. It's obvious, he wrote, that Mrs. Brady believes that I am the only man who could help her to achieve an orgasm, which she so desperately needs. The tragedy is she is not aware of her need. So, true Jew nut. Brady's article, which was published in Harper's Magazine in 1947, and a subsequent one titled The Strange Case of Wilhelm Reich, published in The New Republic, were widely read, bringing Reich much negative attention. Most notably, they caught the attention of the Food and Drug Administration, or the FDA. And then there's on 94 top a graphic, The Strange Case of Wilhelm Reich by Mildred E.D. Brady. Kind of withered old-looking woman. Reich was first visited by an FDA inspector in August of 1947 and remained under investigation by them, along with the FBI, whose file on Reich reached 789 pages, the Immigration and Naturalization Service, INS, and the American Medical Association, AMA, from then on. So everybody's spying on this guy because he's a kook. The remainder of his life was marked by ever-increasing levels of insanity, paranoia, hallucinations, and delusions of grandeur. Now living in a world where the nuclear bomb was a reality, Reich hoped that orgone would work as a counter against radiation sickness. In 1951, he began conducting tests, which he called the Oranur, O-R-A-N-U-R, for Organomic Anti-Nuclear Radiation Experiment. So the Oranur experiment. Attempting to neutralize a vial of radium with orgon, he believed it instead amplified it and erupted a dark and dangerous mushroom cloud over Organon, the large plot of land with multiple laboratories and other facilities in Rangeley, Maine, where Reich was now living. This, Reich thought, was another very significant discovery. There was a dark side to Organ, it seemed. While Organ energy promoted life and was a positive force, this energy was the flip side, a killer, a purely negative force. He named it Deadly Organ Energy, or DOR, all caps. Reich came to believe that the detonation of atomic bombs had disrupted the organ energy of the Earth's atmosphere. He began seeing dark clouds of DOR in the sky, so he built special devices to shoot concentrated organ at the sky to break them apart. This he called cloud busting. And there's a picture of Organon, now the Wilhelm Reich Museum, sort of a square, multi-level Bauhausy looking building. He then came to the belief that hostile aliens were attacking the Earth in Organ-powered spacecraft, maliciously spraying DOR, D-O-R, into the atmosphere. Reich fought them back feverishly with his cloudbuster devices, believing himself to be the only human with the knowledge and ability to ward off the alien attacks and save the planet from imminent destruction. In what he dubbed OROP, Desert, Organ Energy Operation in the Desert, OROP Desert, he and his family would put up a cloudbuster space gun in the back of a pickup truck and fight with these UFOs in the desert at nighttime. A, quote, full-scale interplanetary battle, unquote, he wrote in his book Contact with Space, so he's completely around the bend. In 1954, the FDA was able to secure an injunction on Reich. All of his organ accumulators were ordered destroyed on the grounds that he was dangerously promoting them as a cure for cancer. Then there's a picture of him with one of his pickup truck mounted cloudbusters, the caption reads, and really looks like one of the, you know, like an ISIS truck with guns in the back. Reich was very uncooperative with the courts because he thought that any concession would be akin to admitting wrongdoing, which he would never, ever do. The more he was attacked, the more it just strengthened his belief that he was a martyr for the truth, in the same vein as Jesus, Galileo, or any other historical genius who had been persecuted for having ideas that were ahead of their time. Quote, "A person like me comes along once every 1,000 years," he once said. Eventually, he was sentenced to 2 years in prison. All known accumulators were destroyed, and 6 tons of his literature was burned. He was sent to Lewisburg Federal Penitentiary, where he served alongside and befriended fellow Galician-born Jew Samuel Roth, who we heard about in Part 3 in an earlier session. 8 months later, on November 3, 1957, he was found dead of heart failure in his cell. And there's a graphic, Associate Warden's record card, that IQ at 118, it says. Interesting. The real impact, and a mugshot of him in prison, the real impact of Reich and his life's work came after his death. His theories about sexual repression being at the root of fascism and aggression, which ironically caused him to be kicked out of the Communist Party in 1933 for having, quote, the wrong view of fascism, unquote, were now taken very seriously by the Jewish-dominated media and academia. That sexual repression leads to sadism was a main theme of the mass psychology of fascism, e.g., any inhibition of natural genital gratification increases the sadistic impulses. Direct quote from Reich. Now, post-Nuremberg, where the Nazis had been accused of sadism on a scale never before seen in human history, this theory appeared to be backed by solid evidence. Thus, as Christopher Turner writes in his biography of Reich, Adventures in the Orgasmatron, The Mass Psychology of Fascism, became required reading for post-war intellectuals, trying to understand the Holocaust. So he comes back into vogue after he's dead. During the 60s, the devastation that had been caused by World War II was still a fresh memory, and the U.S. was embroiled in another seemingly senseless war, Vietnam. This made the baby boomer generation, who were living in excess wealth and luxury and packed into overcrowded colleges, ripe for the internalization of Reich's crazy and destructive message. And the Jews pushed it on them, hard. The Jew Norman Mailer, more than any other, is credited with popularizing Reich's views in America during the 60s, using his widely circulated left-wing journal. Use of an, quote, organ accumulator, unquote, was made hip by Mailer, Norman Mailer, and other counterculture figures such as Saul Bellow, Paul Goodman, Henry Miller, and the Beats, see Part 4, Woody Allen and J.D. Salinger, all those Jews except for Henry Miller. Homosexual Beat author William S. Burroughs, he was a non-Jew, claimed he had once had a spontaneous orgasm while sitting in one. All of the big free love sex compounds and experimental swinger clubs that cropped up in the 60s, such as the infamous Sandstone Retreat and the Jew Fritz Perls' Esalen Institute, were based on Reichian philosophies. There's an asterisk which reads, for a detailed description of Sandstone Retreat's Reichian philosophy, see Gay Talese, Thy Neighbor's Wife, 1981, 186 FF. Dagmar Herzog, in her book, Sex After Fascism, writes, quote, reprints of Reich's work from the 20s to the 40s, initially in bootleg copies, then formally published, were widely circulated in the 60s. No book display table on a campus was complete without Reich's The Sexual Revolution or The Function of the Orgasm, and The Mass Psychology of Fascism was, as one contemporary reported, read just as breathlessly. So they were like essentially the Howard Zinn of their time. He's a modern Jew commie historian, so-called. And in the 60s, you would find this sort of radical literature would have been au courant. In 1971, the New York Times published an article titled Wilhelm Reich, the Psychoanalyst as Revolutionary, where they reported on Reich's influence on the sexual and cultural revolution that was rocking American and European universities at that time. And then there's a colon, but before we flip over to page 100, the last of this segment and session, we see a full-page graphic on 99 of Kurt Cobain sitting in one of William Burroughs' organ boxes, and he's raising his hand and smiling of Nirvana, Kurt Cobain, who ended up killing himself. And so the New York Times in 71 writes a big article on Wilhelm Reich, and a quote from that as we flip on to 100. During the student revolts that shook many European universities in the spring of 1968, the influence of the errant psychoanalyst Wilhelm Reich was much in evidence. In Paris, Reichian symbols were crudely painted on the walls of the Sorbonne, the number one university in France. In Berlin, student members of free-living and loving communes pelted police with soft-bound copies of Reich's The Mass Psychology of Fascism. Reich, was being resurrected everywhere in Europe as a hero/saint to students demanding social reform. And remember, there was a massive increase in the number of Americans going to colleges and universities after World War II. People of subpar intellectual ability or sub-collegiate level intellectual ability are going to find things like pseudo-academic urges to pleasure. They're going to find that more attractive because they're less capable of genuine intellectual work. There's always a market for telling people what they want to hear. There's always a market for pandering to vices. And this is what these pseudo-academic Jew political liars, political people hiding as scientists or academics, this is what they're doing. They're pandering to vice to destroy white families and white society. And Wilhelm Reich was one of the masters of that. And maybe even he himself wasn't as good as he provided material that others could use to promote a sexual revolution and sexual liberation. So, says Garland, there we have it. We have this one blatantly insane, perverted Jew to thank, maybe more than anybody else, for the, quote, sexual revolution, unquote. Wilhelm Reich, perhaps the Jew to blame or thank more than anyone else for the sexual revolution, Wilhelm Reich. Another main driving force of the sexual revolution was, quote, second wave feminism, which took off in the 1960s and was also heavily influenced by Reich's works. In fact, much of the platform of second-wave feminism was identical to what Reich had laid out in his radical sexpol doctrine as far back as 1931, which was in turn similar to what had been implemented by the Jewish Marxists in the Soviet Union in the 1920s following the Bolshevik Revolution. Asterisk. Myron Sharaf, on page 157 of Fury on Earth, a biography of Wilhelm Reich, gives us Reich's 1931 Sexpol 7-point program as follows. 1. Free distribution of contraceptives to those who could not obtain them through normal channels. Massive propaganda for birth control. 2. Abolition of laws against abortion. Provision for free abortions at public clinics. Financial and medical safeguards for pregnant and nursing mothers. 3. Abolition of any legal distinctions between the unmarried and the married. Freedom of divorce. Elimination of prostitution through economic and sex economic changes to eradicate its causes. 4. Elimination of venereal diseases by full sexual education. 5. Avoidance of neuroses and sexual problems by a life-affirmative education. Study of principles of sexual pedagogy. Establishment of therapeutic clinics. 6. Training of doctors, teachers, social workers, and so on in all relevant matters of sexual hygiene. 7. Treatment rather than punishment for sexual offenses. Protection of children and adolescents against adult seduction. So you can see those 7 points reflected in pretty much whatever ZOG the U.S. government promotes in 2017 as I read this to you. And also the year this book was published. And the last bit of this segment, going back to the last paragraph. The disproportionate Jewish role in second wave feminism will be the topic of part 7. Before we move on to how the Jews have been using film as a weapon to demoralize us in part 8. So there you have. Now some real learning there about Wilhelm Reich. More or less the father of the sexual revolution. He did a lot of the thinking there, and produced a lot of the work and the crazy ideas that were adopted and marketed and spread by others. A real destroyer of the first water. A typically destructive Jew masquerading as a scientist, but actually a political radical bent on destroying white families, white nations, white society. Well, thanks for being with me today. And as I said, you can find this and everything we record at vnnforum.com, and I'll be back with you again real soon, and we'll pick up with more from Benjamin Garland's Merchants of Sin.